One of the first things I want to tell you is that this book is not in chronological order. There are no time set and a pattern at all. It's subject matter and subject matter and subject matter. So when the subject matters come up, we have to look at that subject matter and find out exactly what it is that that subject matter is at.
Numbers chapter 1. The Lord spoke to Moshe in the wilderness of Sinai in the tent of meeting. On the first day of the second month, in the second year after they had come out of the land of Mitzrayim, saying, "Take a census of all the congregation of the people of Israel, by clans, by fathers' houses, according to the number of names, every male head by head, from 20 years old and upward, all in Israel who are able to go to war. You and Aharon shall list them, company by company, and there shall be with you a man from each tribe, each man being the head of the house of his fathers. And these are the names of the men who shall assist you. From Reuben, Eleazar, son of Shedur. From Shimon, Shalumiel, the son of Zerushaddai. From Yehuda, Nashon, the son of Aminadab. From Issachar, Nathanael, the son of Zuar. From Zebulun, Eliab, the son of Helon. From the sons of Yosef, from Ephraim, Elishama, the son of Amihud. And from Manasseh, Gamaliel, the son of Pedazur. From Benjamin, Abidad, the son of Gideoni. From Dan, Ahiezer, the son of Mishaddai. From Asher, Pagiel, the son of Okran. From Gad, Elisaph, the son of Duel. From Naphtali, Ahira, the son of Anan. These are the ones chosen from the congregation, the chiefs of their ancestral tribes, the heads of the clans of Israel. Moshe and Aharon took these men who had been named, and on the first day of the second month, they assembled the whole congregation together, who registered themselves by clans, by fathers' houses, according to the number of names from 20 year olds and upward, head by head, as the Lord commanded Moshe. So he listed them in the wilderness of Sinai. From the people of Reuben, Israel's firstborn, their generations, by clans, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, head by head, every male from 20 years upward, all who were able to go to war, those listed of the tribe of Reuben, were 46,500. Of the people of Shimon, their generations, by their clans, by their fathers' houses, those of them who were listed, according to the number of names, head by head, every male from 20 years old and upward, all who were able to go to war, those listed of the tribe of Shimon were 59,300. Of the people of Gad, their generations, by their clans, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and upward, all who were able to go to war, those listed of the tribe of God were 45,650. Of the people of Yehuda, their generations, by their clans, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and upward, every man able to go to war, those listed of the tribe of Yehuda were 74,600. Of the people of Issachar, their generations by their clans, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and upward, every man able to go to war, those listed of the tribe of Issachar were 54,400. Of the people of Zebulun, their generations by their clans, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and upward, every man able to go to war, those listed of the tribe of Zebulun were 57,400. Of the people of Yosef, namely of the people of Ephraim, their generations, by their clans, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and upward, every man able to go to war, those listed of the tribe of Ephraim were 40,500. Of the people of Manasseh, their generations, by their clans, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and upward, every man able to go to war, those listed of the tribe of Manasseh were 32,200. of the people of Benjamin, their generations, by their clans, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and upward, every man able to go to war. Those listed of the tribe of Benjamin were 35,400. Of the people of Dan, their generations, by their clans, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and upward, every man able to go to war, those listed of the tribe of Dan were 62,700. Of the people of Asher, their generations by their clans, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and upward, every man able to go to war, those listed of the tribe of Asher were 41,500. Of the people of Naphtali, their generations, by their clans, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and upward, every man able to go to war, those listed of the tribe of Naphtali were 53,400. Those who were listed, whom Moshe and Aharon listed with the help of the chiefs of Israel, 12 men, each representing his father's house. So all those listed of the people of Israel by their father's houses, from 20 years old and upward, every man able to go to war in Israel, all those listed were 603,550. But the Levites were not listed among them by their ancestral tribe, for the Lord spoke to Moshe, saying, "Only the tribe of Levi shall you not list, and you shall not take a census of them according to the people of Israel. But appoint the Levites over the tabernacle of the testimony, and over all its furnishings, and over all that belongs to it. They are to carry the tabernacle and all its furnishings. They shall take care of it, and shall camp around the tabernacle. When the tabernacle is to set out, the Levites shall take it down. And when the tabernacle is to be pitched, the Levites shall set it up. And if any outsider comes near, he shall be put to death. The people of Israel shall pitch their tents by their companies, each man in his own camp, and each man by his own standard. But the Levites shall camp around the tabernacle of the testimony, so that there may be no wrath on the congregation of the people of Israel. And the Levites shall keep guard over the tabernacle of the testimony. Thus did the people of Israel. They did all according to what the Lord had commanded Moshe."
What do you think it's about?
A lot of numbers.
Okay, I guess, yes.
When I used to do studies with the girls before I ever came here, I would skip over this because it was boring to
boring.
Me.
Boring, yes.
And I prayed, I said, "Father, I know this must be important if you put it in the scriptures." And the Holy Spirit said, "Deanne, just get a piece of paper and write it out." And boy, I saw a picture of how organized and how detailed he is. And it just blew my mind.
That's where you're going to see the basic subject matter of the first section of Numbers is about. The precise order and detail. But we're going to go more into that today. Yes.
In verse 51, where he talked about if a stranger comes near, they'll be put to death. What does he mean by come near?
Near the tabernacle.
And stranger, is that just anybody that's not a Levite?
Anybody. No, it means anybody at all. Levites can't. They're allowed to, but not anybody. Not anybody to go into this particular tabernacle. They are to be guarding it. No one's to touch any of the tabernacle parts. When they made it the first time, it's one thing. But once now, who's in charge of the whole tabernacle? The Levites.
Yeah, the translation that I have translates that as commoner.
Commoner, yeah.
Rather than stranger, because stranger might imply it's simply non-Israelite, but
no.
This translation uses the word commoner to make it clear basically anyone who's not a Levite is not supposed to go near the tabernacle.
They're uncommon.
Except maybe through the front door, but
sure.
The point is that these Levites are supposed to be camped all around.
They're to take care of the whole tabernacle. That has to do later on, when we get in the 10th chapter, how to move the tabernacle. So now we're just getting who is going to be responsible for its movement. All right? Any other questions? Now, I want to pay a little bit close attention to something here, which I find, and I will bore you probably throughout the entire book of Numbers. I'm being serious about this now. And that, let's just take a look at the very one of the very first statements that Yahweh said. Verse 1, and Yahweh spoke unto Moses. All right? And, of course, the second birthday of the second month. By the way, in the ninth chapter, it goes back to another subject matter, which begins the first day of the first month. So now we understand this is not about chronological order. It's about sequence of events or sequence of subject matter. And so we're entering into a specific subject matter here in the book of Numbers. It's organized quite differently than you might think in a chronological order. There are subject matters within the book, latter part of the book of Numbers, that did not occur during the time of Moses at all. They didn't occur during the time of Joshua. They occurred during the time of the judges, 400 years later. And so we write about, but now when we read these subject matters, we're going to find out this subject and this subject are related. This subject and this subject, they don't worry about what time it is, because God's not interested in time cycles. God is interested in subject matters, to teaching us and help us to understand. And some people get a little bit confused because they think it should be completely in a chronological order. Well, I'm not even sure the book of Chronicles is in a chronological order, to be honest with you. Because Ezra was the one that established that. And remember, Ezra was the one that was told, gather all the writings you all have and compile them. And so Ezra's one's given the credit of putting what we have in the book of Genesis in that order or in the pattern. And sometimes there's words there that didn't exist during the time of the people at time of their, like Abraham. It didn't exist. But he had explained what it was to people who understood what it is many, many, many thousand years later. So that's a pattern when we look at Genesis and Exodus and not Leviticus so much, but in Numbers. Of recognizing what is going on and what God's subject matter is and what it's all about. Because we learn by subject matter. If you had to go, I don't be smart. But I remember many times you guys, when you went to school in the first grade, second grade, third grade, no certain order, A, B, C, and 1, 2, 3, and all that. And all of a sudden time got up. All of a sudden you got older. And all of a sudden, A is not the most important thing. Something else, their order now is important. No. All of a sudden, another subject matter comes up. And now this subject matter is related to that subject matter, and you know that. Most of you probably had to sit and study, or wanted to sit and study, the every president we ever had, and when they were in office, and at what time they were there, when they departed, and how great do you remember all that stuff now? No, you remember certain people, or certain events. God created us to remember events, not necessarily chronological order, make sure we got it right. Because otherwise, we'd be worthless, to be honest with you. The key thing, before we go any farther, I want you to go to from verse 1, we know he talked about him and Aaron was supposed to do and number the people. But it says there, and it says, verse 2, and it says, after their family. Now that's that word which we think means family. No, it doesn't. Has nothing to do with what we think, oh, I have a family, period. No. It is in the relationship to a clan. An AG clan is an AG clan. There's a big, massive groups of AGs all over the place. You know, and whatever your last name is, big, massive group of that clan all over the place. It's not a family like mom, dad, brother, and sister. No. It's the whole ball of wax. Okay? So we kind of understand that, and it actually can even relate to a being a peoples or a nation. And many times it's been translated into that. The other word that shows up in verse 4 is every man of his tribe. I've explained this word before, but understand about the word tribe. Tribe is not what? What is tribe not? Okay, let me reverse it. What is tribe then? The what? Technically speaking, that word tribe literally translated means a branch. That's all it means. And, you know, and we talked about this, and the Messiah said, I am the, and you are the, You are the tribe. You are the branch. Okay, same exact word, meaning the same exact thing. So when we look at this thing, and how many, quote, branches are out there in this book?
12.
12, specifically for one reason. There's another branch out there, however. That's the Levite branch. Okay? And we're not going to talk about the Levite branch so far today. So we're looking at this point, and he says, now, this is very important because Yahweh is speaking. You know, if you had a red-letter Bible where Yahweh's speaking, it would be all be red. This whole chapter almost completely be red. Why? Because that's who's talking. Now, I find it very fascinating that these are the names, verse 5, of the men that you that shall stand with you, Moses and Aaron, of the tribe of Reuben. Okay, he names one person. But he said, the son of another person. In a sense, we're kind of looking at, let's say, the fourth generation or the 400th year after when Moses, when Abraham was told in 400 years this was going to happen. I read the book of Exodus that it opens up and it says, and Yahweh says, I am now going to establish, bring into establishment of the promise I made to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. So the book of Exodus is not so much how they exited out, it's about the beginning of the promise. It actually began at that time in the fourth generation or the fourth period of time, maybe 400 years, because people lived longer back in those days. You know? Yes?
Can I make a comment? I'm an architect and I make plans. And I make plans for a living. And if you look at Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, there's a difference. This is similar to what I just heard you say that. It's very similar. There's a difference between the making of plans and the execution of them.
Yes.
And in Genesis 1, God created and it was good. And in Genesis 2, he formed and it was very good. Two different processes.
Correct. I understand completely what you're saying. I mean, so that's a good way to look at how God works. You know, because this book is about our creator of heaven and earth and his son and not about Levites. Not about Ephraimites. Not about Manassites. Not about Greeks. Not about Palestinians. It's about God. And we have to keep that focused in mind. I find very fascinating when I read this thing, some of you might remember last time we went through this thing, that the names are important because God named them. I want, this is the man from Reuben I want. Who is the man in Reuben he wanted? What was his name?
Eliezer.
Now, why that name?
Because his name means, my God is a rock.
Now, what is his father's name?
Peter. That means light.
Technically speaking, that's not exactly what it means in Hebrew. All right. Because a lot happens, you know, people write translations and figure it out. Well, this must be the meaning of the word. It basically has to do with fire. And it's casting fire out on a field. So his father's was named the one who moves quickly and fast to spread the fire on a land. Now, at the first thinking, you know, God says, what will come before him when he comes? A fire. So is this really talking about somebody or God telling us, this is now about me? Do you understand what I'm doing? Why I called this man, whose name is, my God is a rock, and his father's name is the one who spreads forth fire very rapidly. Now, these men didn't really do that in real life, did they? There's no indication that one of them was lighting fire. What do you call those? The people that burn things down? Yeah. He wasn't one of them. But God chose him. Now, we have to pay attention to the names. When we don't see a pattern, we have to see a pattern here in the names. When God brings forth these names, the book of Numbers is all about names, 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 names. We went through this before. Every name has a meaning and a purpose, a meaning and a purpose, the meaning and a purpose, all the way down. And we just look at it as just guy. Well, no, it's a branch. These particular men are responsible for the branch. And what were they, what was their function? War. War. Not peace. Not planting trees. Not making diplomatic situations. War. From 20 years up. Only men. And those people who are able to fight. Because if you are have a crippledness or something's happened to you, or you're too old to fight, you know, you're exempt from it. So we're looking here, and these men, and these young men are in the what's called the fourth generation. Okay, the promise. I'm using that quote, fourth generation, loosely. But each one of these men probably had more than one son. But God said, I want that one. As we go through this thing, you'll find out a little bit about the names. Now, first of all, what does the word Reuben mean, Bill, first of all? What? Strength, okay. What did his mother say? Behold what? Behold a son. What does the word son in Hebrew mean? Builder. A builder. One who builds things. And so we have the very first tribe listed by coincidence, right? Is a builder. You think that God had an influence on naming that man? Or his mother, was really brilliant in picking the name? I dominate the boat. She probably responded because she was a Laban, and she was Leah. And she was very, she wasn't an evil lady. She was a good lady, all right? So we're looking at these things going down. Now the next one is about a man named Simeon. What does his name mean?
Peaceful.
What?
Shema.
My? Shema. Okay. Technically it means God heard. Because remember when he was born? He said, God heard me. Okay? Of course, it's coincidental, right? So out of that name comes this person. The first thing we hear is the builder. Now comes this one, the name. God heard something. What did he hear? Well, let's go on to the very next person he picked. That is, God picked. We reach into the point of the point that says that God chose these men to do a job. They didn't volunteer for it. They were, quote, drafted without choice by the will of God. But these men are honorable men. They're good men. They came out of Egypt. They're in the second year now. And they had learned an awful lot in the first year out there by Mount Sinai. And God's ready to move them on. Before he can move them on, he has to tell them how I want this party or this group, this land to move. We'll talk about encampments as we go in the book of Numbers later. And his sons, and God chose whom? Whom? What does his name mean?
God is my king.
What?
God is my king.
Okay.
How about
peaceful? Okay. El is there, and God is what?
Where are we on?
We're on chapter, verse 6. Out of Hebrew, his name means, the root word means, to be soundness, to be completeness. Okay, so it's not just that God is a friend or God is peace. Peace, if you use the word peace, make sure you understand, we're not talking about, oh, I have peace in the valley. We're talking Hebrew phrase, safety. God is a place of safety. All right? And it's complete. It's firm. Nothing move. What's his dad's name? What does that mean? So it's interesting here. We're pulling out names that Almighty, now this son is a son of one man who God named, I am Almighty. So Almighty is telling us he is doing all the choosing, right? He's doing everything in the entire picture. It's not a matter of, oh, just a bunch of names we have to run through and figure out what they have to say. Now who's the next one? Now be careful what you think it means. What does Yehuda mean? Has to do what? Something with the hand. His name is Yod. His first arm started Yod. Why would his hand be there? Yes.
It seems to me the pattern that I've seen anytime you see the hand of God or his right hand always represents the Yeshua, his
Yeah, we're
his strength.
Getting there. See, now we're talking about a picture, not the man, Yehuda, not the nation of Jewish people, not me, not you, but of the name. These names are very, very important. And it says that he will glorify God. Yehuda means, we call it praise, which is kind of a sick word for modern English, but it's to glorify God. He glorifies God with his hand. You got the picture there? That's very interesting. Now, what was the name of the man that Yehuda called? What was his name? Mashon. Now, what does that mean? Sorry, what?
We don't have our...
We don't know.
Well, somebody comes up with the name. They figured out what it was. All right, I'll translate it for you. It's been translated in English. Ben-Nezah's, let's see, what does it call it? An enchanter. Enchanter. This guy's chance, right? Why would God have a chanter out there? Well, we have to be very careful with the Hebrew word, right? Because the word,
Enchanter,
what'd I say? Enchanter, E-N-C-A-N-T-U-R. Right, okay.
Different than a chanter.
Now our first thought is, oh great, speaking of seances, right? When you research the Bible, yes, 99% of them is always about speaking to somebody of the other world, that is, of the demonic world, or satanic world, or of the dead, or of the spirit world, right? Well, I'm going to get you a little closer. In Genesis chapter 30, verse 27, then I'll take you to a place where it's also really strange, but when we understand the Hebrew root of the word, then we have a better understanding of why God said, I want that one. 27, 30, chapter 30, verse 27. And what took place? We knew that Jacob left and took all his kids with him, all his family with him, right? And of course, Laban was a little bit upset about that, just a little bit, you know? And so he said to him, please stay if I have found favor in your eyes, for I have learned by experience that Yahweh has blessed me for your sake. That's the same Hebrew word. See, it doesn't always work when you change it into this nice English word, which means one who calls forth the dead, does it? Go another place. First Kings. The object, what I'm trying to do here today is that when you find a definition, make sure you have a better deepness of understanding why it's used in one place in a negative aspect and another place a positive aspect. Because you have to go to the root of the word. Yes?
So the word experience in this particular verse means enchanter?
No.
No?
We have to go to the verb. We're not taught to the verb yet. Okay? Get to the verb. Now, I'm just showing you a few scriptures here where this word doesn't always work in the negative sense, because it really has been translated in a wrong sense. I'll tell you the honest truth. That's my purses. Second, I said 1 Kings chapter 20 and verse 33. And he says, now, verse 33, now the men were watching closely to see whether there was any sign of mercy would come from him. They're watching closely. Now we're getting a little bit closer to the meaning of the word, aren't we? Just by those two phrases. Now let's go one more place, and then I'll tell you what it means.
So basically, that same word, Nashon, was translated experience over in Genesis. And now it was translated watching closely.
Yes, this is now I'm going to third place. Third place. I had to have three things. People like 3 minutes.
That's what you're trying to point out, is how it was translated differently in three
different
places.
And what we're trying to find out is when you translated what it is in Hebrew, all of a sudden those other places were translated as enchantment. You should change it and say, what if it means this? Now you have a greater understanding of what the subject matter is all about. All right? I'm not telling you to go for a word search thing. I just be aware of what's going on. Now, the most famous person that people have a hard time, and let's go to Genesis chapter 44. I have to third. I got three. I'm not going to go any farther than this. Okay? And it says here now, Genesis 44, chapter 13. Verse 15, rather. Joseph, remember who he is? Said to them, 15th verse, chapter 44 of Genesis, what deed is this you have done? Did you not know that such a man as I, that I can practice what? Deviation. Oh, wow. That's a really nasty one, isn't it? So now we have to go to the root word, don't we? The root word, it's H5172. To observe the signs, or to watch closely to experience what it's all about and see what the result is. That's all it means, to observe. Watch carefully. Watch closely. And there here, Joseph is saying, don't you know that I watch carefully? And by whose power do I watch my careful? By the Creator of heaven and earth himself. He lets me see things. How do you know that? What about, remember his dreams? He didn't understand them until they were at the end of his life. I mean, when they came back. So we have a little different understanding now. God has this man who's going to do something. Watch very carefully. Observe very carefully. Because, you know, he's going to be in the army. He's going to be part of the military. His group of people are going to be the watchmen. You ever heard that terminology before? How was his father's name? Now, what does that mean? It has to do with my men or my family are something. And it's basically in Hebrew, it translates to are willing. My kinsman or my family is willing. So here's dad saying, my family is willing, but out of his family, one son was picked who was a watchman. We're back in Numbers, yeah. So as we go forward and we see these things, we have a pattern. And we just rattle off the names and try to get past the names. We have to ask God, why did you name them? Why did you pick that person? Is it because that person will fill the job? No, because I picked them. Did God pick Aaron because he was qualified and capable. So God said, oh, yeah, he'd make a good priest. No, he just picked him. Did God just pick Moses because he was, you know, a good man? Moses ran away and was a coward. And God picked him up. He was so terrified of his life that he was terrified of the burning bush. And he didn't want to do the job. Didn't want to do it. And God, what? Was he qualified? No. Did God make him qualified?
Yes.
And this is a subject matter I want you to understand. We go with the book of Numbers. These men's names are named off. They are not yet become that. They are going to become that because they're not at war yet. The subject matter is about the tabernacle, right? This whole chapter is centered around the tabernacle. And we keep going in the book of Numbers. You can find out who is at what position. And now a new set of names show up. Oh, my. That's confusing. Well, not really. Yep. My family is willing, basically what it says. A little translation. Now we have a non-guide Issachar. What does Issachar mean? Oh, yes.
So is he preparing his men for war, but protecting the tabernacle?
No, that's...
But he's
preparing the men for war, period, point blank.
Okay.
And they are to protect or surround something. Yeah, which is what? The dwelling place of the Eternal himself. All right? That's his army. God says, God's army, God's army, God's army. God, and look what's building here. Yes.
There's an old saying that God didn't take Israel into the wilderness to take them out of Egypt, but to get Egypt out of them.
Now we're at this point where what is the object here in Numbers? It's not to get them out of Egypt. What is the object here in chapter 1? Build an army for what? To crown the tabernacle, and guess what? When the tabernacle moves, they move. The tabernacle is the leader of the war. The tabernacle of God is the warrior. But we have these songs, you know, who is like a warrior like God? There's no man, nobody could be like God. And so we're seeing these people surrounding their commander-in-chief, the tabernacle, where God says, this is my dwelling place. This is where it's at. Oh, no, I don't want you to protect me. When I'm telling you, when I move, you go to war. Where I'm going to take you to go to war with. You understand what I'm saying? It's not a protection of the tabernacle. This has to do, as we read Numbers, we have to see the time. We'll go through Numbers, really long, laborious book, I've said. But we have nuts called Issachar. What does Issachar mean?
It's not only is it what he's setting up for war. This is all pictures of the future.
Of the who?
Of the future.
No argument whatsoever. I understand what you're saying. And so we're trying to find out, as we keep going, that God already has things well planned out long ago, and he's showing us a picture of how he is going to do it, and not necessarily when, but how, and by what method, and who's going to be involved. Now, these men were picked because they were great men. No, it says they were noble men. We'll talk about the word noble in a minute. Technically speaking, in Hebrew, I'll tell you right now, that word says noble in some of your translation. It's not what it says. It says these are the men who are called to do the assignment. Period. That's what it basically means. They didn't volunteer. They weren't greater than anybody else in their family. They weren't the greatest son of the father. They were nothing. They were just people. And God made them into something. He called them in to go to battle. These men had the responsibility. You know what they had to do? They had to learn war. They didn't fight very well under Joshua. They had to have help. Now these men are going to be prepared for war. Okay? Issachar means here is recompense. Recompense. Basically, literally, it means this. Okay? Something has to be paid for. It's going to cost. What's it going to cost? What's the name of his of the man that God picked? What do you think that means? Not really in Hebrew. It's not a gift. And literally in Hebrew, it means the one who is set by God. Not given, in the sense that we're given. God gave this man an assignment. So when you use the word Nathan or Nathan, it doesn't mean that it's a gift of God. No, assignment. God has appointed him, assigned him to do something. And the actual Hebrew word means to, that means to give, not to give a gift, but to give command, to put into command, to put into the place on set where I put you. So now we have, interesting name, a price has to be paid. Now we have a man is set there, or at least a name, and then he has a father. What's his father's name? Very interesting word. Now, the reason why we're going through these names is so we can understand not what the names mean and who they are, but about God, right? I always tell you, we're trying to look at what God's thinking, why God chose them, why he chose those words, why he chose those men, and it's not by coincidence they happen to have it. My personal, Richard Agee's thinking, God appointed those names to those men, even though they didn't know it. I don't think my name was appointed by God. That's my personal opinion. I'm not rich, nor is my heart gentle. It's just not.
Scripture says when we get to heaven, we'll be given a new name. Scripture says when we get to heaven, we'll be given a new name, or he'll call us by a new name. So he may call us by that name now and then give it to us later. Without us knowing. I mean, these guys might not... You know, they might not have known what their names were. It was just written down for us.
Now, what this means is the father's name was, in a sense, called of little insignificance. Comes from the verb to be, that which is to be grow into insignificance, to grow small, to become insignificant. Out of that father comes this other, his son, who was given something. This is Issachar. Keep those names in mind as we keep on going. Zebulun. What does Zebulun mean? What does Zebulun mean? The exalted one. The one who's being exalted. Zebulun, yeah. Exalted one. Now we have a pattern here. If you've kind of watched so far, watch the pattern of the names. All right? The builder. God is rock. Casting fire forth. Land. Sound. Firm. Almighty. Do you see a pattern here? Watching. Diligently watching. Willing. Got to pay a price. And it's going to be set aside. And it's going to be insignificant. Almost insignificant. Unimportant. But... exalted. Who are we talking about here? Now, we're seeing that when Yeshua said what he said, in the very names themselves, and Daniel went through this in the book of Joshua, and all the names listed in specific order led us to one person and one person only. The Son of God. So you see a pattern here. And it's very fascinating as we go on through. As we keep on going, now they use Joseph. Wait a minute. So his father's name was... I went too fast. Well, it says, my God is Father. That's what the son, the one he picks says, my God is the Father, or my Father is God. All right? And then his father name was... Verse 9. We're talking Zebulun, which means exalted, or the exalted one. Then that one God picked, the name that God picked, that son that God picked, his name is, my God is Father, or God is Father. Oh. Eliav.
H-E-L-O-N.
Eliav.
E-L-I-A-V.
Yeah, in English is, yeah. Oh, we have got, no, they asked me about, no. Now the father's name was what? Hello. Means strength, mighty, efficient, and an army. Those all different kind of translations. And we're here, we're seeing a picture of the exalted one. Now, he's insignificant, unimportant, made no dent in history, or dent in life. People want to get rid of him, they got rid of him, and now he's exalted. But not immediately. How many years before Yeshua was even exalted? A lot of years later. Okay, but we're not worried about that time. Time is not an issue with God. It's the subject matter that's the issue with God. And the next one is the name of Joseph. What does Joseph mean? We're in verse 10. Yeah. Joseph. What does that mean? Something's been added. God added. Basically, that's what it means. Jehovah or Yahweh or Yehuda adds. Added. What did he add? He added what? He added Ephraim. He added Manasseh. The only one that are two involved of all the sons. Now, what does, before we go into the translations of this ones that God picked, what does Ephraim mean? Ephraim. Simple, what does it mean? Means what? No. All it really means is double.
What?
Double heap, a double pile, double amount. Double. So Ephraim is going to be twice as strong as whom? No, Joseph is not. Joseph is the strength. Okay, he is the one that says, I have added to Joseph Ephraim, which one who is doubled. That was his strength. We're talking men of war here. We're talking about people who go to war here. We're not talking about fruits and nuts. The subject matter is war. So don't put that name only meaning this one spot, this one place, and nothing else. Keep with the subject matter. I said this subject matter, book of Numbers, is about subjects. And it goes to a detail about war. And so we don't pick a definition of the word that seems pleasant to us. Find out why he picked that name in association with what's called going to war. You understand? So if he's twice as strong, in a sense. And what does Manasseh mean? What? Forget it. So why is it come second and not first? Well, it should be second. Well, I'm just going to the name of Manasseh. Right? We're talking about the two sons of Joseph for a minute, please. Talk about two sons of Joseph, because this one does this one. Over here is the other son, and God chose out of that one, not of any other tribe. Just the tribe of Joseph. Or I should say the branch of Joseph. Joseph had two branches. He had two rods. He had two sticks. Now, when Joseph ruled Egypt, did he have himself two sticks? To forget, I meant to forget your family. Basically, just like Abraham said, don't leave and forget your family. The same situation here with Joseph. Same picture, identical. Forget your family. Manasseh. That's why Joseph's name is Joseph. But let's get into what the war is about. Because the subject matter is war. Do I repeat myself again? Well, I have. Otherwise, it gets boring if I just stay in one subject matter, to tell the truth. So let's go into the Ephraim for a minute. And who did God pick? What does that name mean?
God hears.
Yes, same, almost the same thing as Simeon. God hears. God understands. God knows, or what it is, I am hearing God. All right? You reverse that on the other way around as well. Next, and his father was whom? Namely, it says, in this case, my family is splendor. They're fantastic. They are vigor. They're fighters. They go to war. These are victorious. Basically, that's the father's name. But his son's name is what? God has heard. Now, in Manasseh's situation, who was the one God called? Let me get, okay, now this is very fascinating. It's very close to the other meaning. What does it mean? Something about God got El there, right? Means the payment of God or payment from God. Payment of God or payment from God. Pay careful attention to this terminology. This is with Manasseh. This is the one that God chose. Now, what it means in Hebrew is to deal fully, to repay, like the other one with in the sons of Issachar, or Issachar himself, to have a recompense. Something has to be paid for. And the payment's going to come from God. This payment that God is paying, not people. And his father's name was what? Very interesting. That has the word rock in it again, but it has another word matching to it. What is it? Okay. Here's a rock, right? And it says, God is a rock, right? Now all of a sudden this rock comes back again. And all of a sudden we have a payment has been made. What? From God? And it really says the rock is the ransom. That's the price that has to be paid. Right? So who or what is being paid? A rock is being extinguished. How do you think that is? The Son of God. You see the pattern here? So when we go through the book of Numbers and all these names, it gets sort of boring after a while, but we kind of find out, okay, now the verb means this. Everything is verb-based, by the way, in Hebrew, remember that. Sometimes it's hard to find that verb base, I'll grant you 100%. And other times it's not that hard. But you find the verb base, has several different meanings. And what I try to do in my research, he's talking about war here. He's talking about a price being paid here. He's talking about death, battle. And when God moves, guess what happens? Hey, there's something is of value. Precious to God, right? So it's very fascinating to keep this. Now, Benjamin, of course, is what? Son of the right hand. So it's the right hand God. We know that's kind of self-explanatory, right? That means the rock is going to be my right hand. But I'm going to pay the price. And the rock is going to be what's going to be the payment for it. And also in Hebrew, that also can mean the rock is reserved to set aside for something. Also in Hebrew, there's two different meanings of that word. Yeah. Now Benjamin had a son, and then the one son that God named from that tribe is what? You know what that means? My father is the judge. Now, does that mean? I think it means that Yeshua himself was telling us my father's a judge. That's my personal thing. And that's my father's judgment. The ransom will be paid. It's set aside. And it's going to be paid by him. Next. What's his father's name? Yep. What that basically means in Hebrew is, okay, one who hews out a path. One who cuts things either in stone or wood. One who is warlike. That's what this really subject matter is, one who is warlike. Now, we know that the Messiah is going to come with a sword, right? So he's going to come. Now, this is my Father's judgment. I'm going to come, and I'm going to bring a rod of iron. I've got to quit. I'm almost finished. All right. And now we have Dan, which means the judge itself. That's self-explanatory. And he picked a man, God picked a man's name that says, my brother is help, or my brother will help. And his father's name means basically, my kingdom is from Almighty, is the people of Almighty. My kinmen are the people of Almighty. That's the tribe of Dan, and the father's, the son and the father. Asher. I know translation has, it means happy. But when you break down that verb, it means one that goes straight. One that goes straight. Doesn't veer off the pathway. All right. And he had a son. But God picked a son from that tribe. And it basically means the event or happening of God. That's what his name means. And his father's name, we're in verse 13. I'm rolling rapidly here because I got to get out of time. His father's name means trouble. 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 Verse 13. The father's name.
P-A-G-I-E-L. Is that the one you're on?
No. Asher. I said verse 13. I'm going rapidly because I'm running out of time. You've got the pattern going, which I'm trying to show you why the names were there, why God chose the names. He chose these men. He chose them for a reason. Not because they were great leaders, because there's a picture of something that's going to happen and be revealed. And Yahshua said, it's all about me. You have a history, in a sense, of the events of not mankind, for the history and events of the Messiah. Not physically, but in power, in weakness, in strength, in insignificancy to exalted. It's all written here. And we look at the names instead of just reading them all off, trying to figure out what they mean. My wife, you know, she writing out the Torah with hand. Me, I did that thing, I had to, okay, I got to define that word. 15 paragraphs later. Okay, now what's the next word? My rewriting the Torah would be at least that thick. Because I would tear every word apart, because that's what I do. But that's just me. Okay, that's just me. Now we'll go to the next one, of course, is Gad. Is what? Means troop or an army. Gad, chapter verse 14. An army. We're verse 14 now. We're talking about Gad or Gid or Gade. I want to pronounce it. It's actually she pronounces Gade rather than God. It's just a long, hard E sound. And God picked one of his picked a man whose name was. Basically, in simple language, it means God has gathered together. God has added by gathering together to increase and do it again. His father's name was Duel. And basically means, they know God. Fascinating. The father's name was, they know God. Or, they're known of God. One way or the other. Depends on how one wants to translate that. You go backward this way or that way in Hebrew. But now we're talking about the troops, the ones that go to war, and the army will be what? They'll know exactly who they are because God's going to gather them together to go to war. Then we go to Naphtali. Naphtali means what? I am wrestling.
I am
wrestling. I'm wrestling. Remember Leah and Rebecca? When Leah had this, she was wrestling, fighting. He said, oh, yeah, okay, typical, two women, yeah, typical, two sisters, right? Yeah, typical, right? No, it's not talking about them, nor their sons, but God. All right? So God is wrestling or fighting. Now, a particular son was, that God chose was what? Which means, be careful how you understand this word. Be careful how you understand this word. Probably some of you says, my brother is evil. Evil. But go to the Hebrew root. It doesn't even mean bad all the times. Other places in scripture, it also means my brother is in pain. My brother is unhappy. He's in misery. That's a, yes, you've got, I have said this before and I'll say it again. When it's in the text, you've got to find out exactly what the subject matter is about. Remember the knowledge of good and, it's supposed to be knowledge of good and bad. And we translate it in English as evil. And we think the word evil is, really means evil. Bad is one thing, you know. The boy did a bad thing. Okay, what do you do? You correct the boy who did something bad. What do you do? He doesn't do good. You know, it's like being clean and unclean, being holy and unholy. How do you go from being unholy to being holy? Stop doing what you're doing. How do you go from being unclean to clean? Clean yourself up. Simple. But God has a little simple pattern for them all. It's not that difficult to do. So, and his father's name was? Now, it says having eyes. His father could see what was going on. His father could see what's going on. Fascinating. Having eyes to see. To perceive. Not to focus in on saying, oh, I know what that is. To perceive, to understand, to get into the depths of. Baba used the word eyes for an awful lot of meaning. Primarily, most of the time, it doesn't that mean what you look through. It means to understand and perceive what's going on. Now, that's a father's name. Now this word renowned, I told you before, all that really means in Hebrew is to call out for a burden. In verse 16, I'm not going any farther than 16, I'll quit it right now. The word, some of your translations have the word renowned. It means, in Hebrew, that would become the verb means what? It means to call out or to address what is to be your burden. These men, quote, are not burden. If we're talking about a burden, what's a burden? What's a burden? Something you love to do? It's a hard thing. Now, who is going to receive the burden? Keep that in mind. How long did he pray to not have to take the burden? And how many times?
Three times?
He wanted this burden to be lifted. No. Second time, I want the burden to be lifted. No. It's called the cup. Third time, I want to remove the cup. No. He had to carry the burden to the end. This is not about the house of Israel carrying a burden to the end. It's not about the nation or people. It's not about the Jewish people. It's not about the Ephraimite people. It's not about the Nazarite people. It's not about the Danite people. It's about the creator of heaven and earth and his son. So as we go through the book of Numbers, I only went halfway through this thing. I knew it wouldn't finish no matter what. I hope we have a little picture of what it is. When we look at the word, we're talking, these are the words of God. If it said, if your Bible had this thing in red every time Yahuwah spoke, it would be all red up to verse 16, I guess it was. They all be words of his and nobody else's. Yes.
Can you read them, the meanings, just in order, one after the other? Do you have them in that
Yes, I do have them, but not here. I got a pamphlet that big of all the names, the book of Genesis, the book of Numbers. At this point, well, this chapter said what that chapter said. Well, this chapter said what that chapter said. They're not even separated far away apart. Chapter 1 is different than chapter 26. They're in order right now, yeah. Oh, you want... Do we have time for that? Their names or the meaning?
The meaning of the name in order slowly. One after the other. Please.
Behold a son, a builder. God is rock. Casting forth fire on land. Completeness, soundness. My God is almighty. Hands spread out to glorify. The enchanter, experience, or watchman, the watching person, one that watches. Got one down. My family is willing. Something has to be paid, recompense. It's set by God. Insignificant, unimportant. Exalted. Strength, mighty, efficient. Added, Jehovah has added, double. My God heard. My kinsman, his majesty, splendor. They're mighty, their force. What's the other one now? See, forget. Causing to forget. Payment of God, dealt formally. Rock has a ransom. The son of the right hand. My father judges his judgment. He makes the pathway, cutting it down, war. He judges. My brother is a helper. My kinsman is almighty. I have strength. Happening of God, troubled, stirred up, disturbed. Troop, God has added, gathered together. They know God. Wrestling. My brother is upset, unhappy, miserable, having eyes to perceive. That answer your question? Well, my suggestion to you is, well, you know, what the names, I'm sorry, when I first did this, I got a lot of pamphlets written up, I've got stuff written out that thick. And of course I'm big fonts because I can't see worth beans. If I narrowed it down to, you know, 8, I'd probably get it down on probably 10 pieces of paper. But mine's right now is about 20 or 30 because I can't read very well anymore. But it's all there. I got all the names and all they meant and where they come from, what the meaning, what's the root, and another pamphlet. I'm not going to give that out to you. It's still in a film of research, okay? But you're going to learn something, which I'm doing right now. I look at the names, find out the names, and how does that have to do anything with the creator of heaven and earth? At all, if anything. Every name has something to do with the creator of heaven and earth and his son.